ولما دخلوا على يوسف آوى إليه أخاه قال إني أنا أخوك فلا تبتئس بما كانوا يعملون.
When they presented themselves before Joseph, peace be upon him, he took his brother aside to himself and said, Verily, I am your own brother, Joseph, peace be upon him. So do not grieve over the manner they have treated you. This little sentence encapsulates all that transpired between the two real brothers at their reunion after a lapse of some 21 to 22 years. During this meeting, Joseph, peace be upon him, would have told Benjamin of all the situations he found himself in prior to having reached his present stage of power and renown. Benjamin would have told Joseph, peace be upon them, of the maltreatment meted out to him by his stepbrothers. Joseph would have also confronted Benjamin, peace be upon them, saying that from now onwards he would stay with him and that he would not allow him to return with his cruel stepbrothers. It is quite likely that at this point the two brothers would have jointly worked out a plan that would enable Benjamin to remain behind in Egypt. The two brothers did not, however, wish to disclose this plan as Joseph, peace be upon him, wanted certain things to stay concealed at least for a while.
فَلَمَّا جَهَّزَهُمْ بِجَهَازِهِمْ جَعَلَ السِّقَايَةَ فِي رَحْلِ أَخِيهِ ثُمَّ أَذَّنَ مُؤَذِّنٌ أَيَّتُهَا الْعِيرُ إِنَّكُمْ لَسَارِقُونَ
Then, while Joseph, peace be upon him, was having their provisions loaded, he put his drinking cup in his brother's saddlebag. Then a herald cried, Travelers, you are thieves. He put his drinking cup in his brother's saddlebag.
Apparently, Joseph himself devised the scheme whereby his drinking cup be put in Benjamin's saddlebag. This was done with Benjamin's full knowledge and consent, as is evident from the preceding verse. For had Joseph, peace be upon him, simply issued a public order preventing Benjamin from returning, he would have been forced to reveal his true identity. This was unwise at that stage. Hence, the two brothers would have discussed how to achieve their desired purpose. Doubtlessly, the scheme which they devised was bound to bring Benjamin's reputation under a temporary cloud, as he would be implicated in a case of theft. However, it would not be difficult to subsequently remove such a misunderstanding. For at a date mutually agreed upon by the two brothers, they could reveal the undisclosed part of the whole story, and thus remove the stigma of moral turpitude from his brother.
Then a herald cried, Travelers, you are thieves.
Neither the present verse nor the ones that follow provide any hint whatsoever to support the belief that Joseph, peace be upon him, had taken his servants into his confidence regarding this matter and directed them to level a false charge of theft against the caravan. The incident seems to have been no more than that the drinking cup was surreptitiously put in Benjamin's saddlebag. Later on, the government officials would have concluded that someone from the caravan had committed the theft.
قالوا وأقبلوا عليهم ماذا تفقدون
Turning back, they asked, What have you lost?
قالوا نفقد صواع الملك ولمن جاء به حمل بعير ولمن جاء به حمل بعير وأنا به زعيم
The officials said, We have lost the king's cup. And their chief added, He who brings it shall have a camel load of provisions. I guarantee that.
قالوا تالله لقد علمتم ما جئنا لنفسد في الأرض وما كنا سارقين
They said, By Allah, you certainly know that we did not come to act corruptly in this land, nor are we those who steal.
قالوا فما جزاؤه إن كنتم كاذبين
The officials said, "If you are lying, what will be the penalty for him who has stolen?"
قَالُوا جَزَاؤُهُ مَنْ وُجِدَ فِي رَحْلِهِ فَهُوَ جَزَاؤُهُ كَذَلِكَ نَجْزِي الظَّالِمِينَ
They replied, "He on whose saddlebag the cup is found, he himself shall be its recompense. Thus do we punish the wrongdoers." He himself shall be its recompense. Thus do we punish the wrongdoers.
It must be remembered that since Joseph's brothers belonged to the Abrahamic family, the relevant law which they referred to was the Abrahamic law. According to that law, a thief had to be handed over to the person whose property he had stolen.
فَبَدَأَ بِأَوْعِيَتِهِمْ قَبْلَ وِعَاءِ أَخِيهِ ثُمَّ اسْتَخْرَجَهَا مِنْ وِعَاءِ أَخِيهِ كَذَلِكَ كِدْنَا لِيُوسُفَ مَا كَانَ لِيَأْخُذَ أَخَاهُ فِي دِينِ الْمَلِكِ إِلَّا أَنْ يَشَاءَ اللَّهُ نَرْفَعُ دَرَجَاتٍ مَنْ نَشَاءُ وَفَوْقَ كُلِّ ذِي عِلْمٍ عَلِيمٍ
Then Joseph, peace be upon him, began searching their bags before searching his own brother's bag. Then he brought forth the drinking cup from his brother's bag. Thus did we contrive to support Joseph, peace be upon him. He had no right, according to the religion of the king, i.e. the law of Egypt, to take his brother, unless Allah so willed. We exalt whomsoever we will over others by several degrees, and above all, those who know is the one who truly knows.
Then he brought forth the drinking cup from his brother's bag. Thus did we contrive to support Joseph, peace be upon him.
It is worth casting a glance at the whole series of events and then considering which specific device was directly inspired by God in support of Joseph, peace be upon him. Obviously, Joseph, peace be upon him, himself suggested putting the drinking cup in Benjamin's saddlebag. In normal circumstances, the servants would have detained all members of the caravan suspecting that any one of them might have stolen Joseph's cup. What then constitutes the step which was part of God's own plan? A careful study of the relevant verses brings out one fact very clearly. The servants asked the suspected culprits to state the punishment for theft. In response, they mentioned the punishment laid down by Abrahamic law. This served two purposes. Firstly, it enabled Joseph, peace be upon him, to act according to Abrahamic law. Secondly, it enabled Joseph, peace be upon him, to detain Benjamin rather than to send him to prison.
To take his brother unless Allah so willed.
It was unbecoming of Joseph, peace be upon him, as a prophet, to follow Egyptian law in a manner that related to him personally. The scheme which had been devised to retain his brother presented one problem. Joseph, peace be upon him, could have detained his brother, but in order to do so, it would have been necessary to have recourse to Egyptian penal law. This was unbecoming of a prophet who had taken authority into his own hands in order to replace man-made laws with those of God. Had God so willed, he could have let Joseph, a prophet, peace be upon him, commit this mistake. However, God did not do so. Thus, thanks to God's inspiration, a way out of the difficulty was found. An inquiry was addressed to Joseph's brothers. What punishment was laid down for a thief? In response, they mentioned the relevant provision of Abrahamic law. This was quite pertinent since Joseph's brothers were not subjects of the Egyptian state. Instead, they came from another territory which was independent. They were quite prepared, in accordance with the provisions of their law, to hand over a member of their group to the authorities that he may be punished for his crime. Hence, there was no need for Joseph to have recourse to Egyptian penal laws. In this way, God bestowed his favor upon Joseph and demonstrated his infinitely superior knowledge. What could be greater means of exalting Joseph's position than this? When out of human weakness, Joseph, peace be upon him, was on the verge of committing an error God planned from on high and found a way to prevent this from happening.
Such an exalted status is conferred only on those who prove their mettle after successfully going through a series of tests. Now, although Joseph, peace be upon him, was quite knowledgeable and acted wisely, there was nevertheless a gap in the plan he had devised. That gap was filled by the one whose knowledge surpasses the knowledge of every knower. There are some points relating to the incident which deserve some explanation. 1. Usually translators and commentators on the Quran consider the verse to mean the following. Joseph could not have apprehended his brother according to the law of the land. The Quranic expression Maqana liya'aqsa akhanahu is interpreted to mean that Joseph did not have the authority to apprehend his brother. Rather than that, it was inappropriate and unbecoming of Joseph to do so. Such an understanding of the verse is wrong both from the point of view of Arabic idiom and Quranic usage. For the Arabic usage, Maqana lahu means it is not proper for him. There are many instances of this usage in the Quran to support this sense. A. It is not befitting to the majesty of Allah that he should take a son. Maryam 19:35. B. It is not proper for us to associate any with Allah in his divinity. Yusuf 12:38. C. Allah is not going to disclose to you what is hidden in the realm beyond the reach of perception. Al-Imran 3:179. D. And Allah will never leave your faith to waste. Al-Baqarah 2:143. It is not Allah who wrongs them. Al-Tawbah 9:70. F. Allah will not let the believers stay in the state they are. Al-Imran 3:179. G. It is not for a believer to slay another believer. Al-Nisa 4:92. In view of the above instances of Quranic usage, the verse under discussion as usually interpreted by Quran commentators makes no sense. For what would prevent Joseph, peace be upon him, from arresting a thief under the king's law? In fact, there has never been any state on earth which prevented the arrest of a thief. 2. By using the expression Din al-Malik to signify royal law, God has himself indicated the meaning of the word Din. For it is quite evident that God's messengers are raised to implement and enforce Din Allah, the law of God, rather than law of the king. However, if it was not possible due to adverse circumstances to replace the king's law by God's law, it was at least unbecoming of a messenger to follow the king's law in a matter that related to his own self. Thus, Joseph's decision not to punish his brother in accordance with the king's law was not based on the grounds that it was not possible for him to do so under the king's law. Rather, the only reason was that, being a messenger of God, it was not appropriate for Joseph to follow the king's law instead of God's law in matters relating to himself. 3. By using the term deen to denote the law of the land, God has indicated the wide-ranging jurisdiction of deen. This strikes at the very root of the concept of deen or religion, which is perceived, according to ordinary parlance, to be concerned merely with adherence to a set of religious belief and rituals, of adhering to certain forms of worshipping the one true God. Were one to accept such a narrow conception, religion would be able to say nothing worthwhile about man's societal life, about politics, civilization, economy, justice, legislation, and such other facets of man's worldly life. Or, if religion has anything to say about such matters, it would merely be of a recommendatory nature. According to such a view, if people follow the guidelines provided by religion, all well and good. But if they do not, and instead follow man-made laws, then there is nothing objectionable about this. This patently erroneous concept of religion, which has been popular among Muslims for quite some time, largely accounts for why Muslims have become negligent in their duty of establishing an Islamic order of life. As a result, they have become reconciled to live under a way of life based on Jahiliya. Not only that, but some Muslims in our time have even come to believe that it is the sunnah of a prophet, viz. Joseph, peace be upon him, to administer a system of life based on Jahiliya. Such ideas have made Muslims ready to become cogs in the machinery of an un-Islamic government, willing to bend their efforts to operate it efficiently. Such an attitude, according to the present verse, is altogether wrong. Instead, we are told that the law on which society is based and which governs the affairs of the state is as much a part of deen, religion, as prayer. Thus is further born out of such Quranic verses as, "The true religion with Allah is Islam," Al-Imran 3:18, and "Whoever seeks a way other than this way of Islam will find that it will not be accepted from him," Al-Imran 3:85. These verses require that believers should totally submit themselves to deen, and deen, apart from prescribing prayer and fasting, also lays down laws relevant for operating the social system and the administration of a country. The Quran, as we have noted above, stipulates that if Muslims deviate from Islam, whether in matters of worship or of social organization, such an attitude is unacceptable to God. 4. It should also be pointed out, in light of the above verse, that at that time, the law of the king, rather than the law of God, operated in Egypt. Now, since Joseph had political control over Egypt, the conclusion is that Joseph enforced the law of the king rather than the law of God. It might even be argued that Joseph's adherence to Abrahamic law rather than to the royal law of Egypt in a matter relating to himself makes little difference. For it is evident that it is according to man-made laws that cases were judged in Egypt during his period of rule. Such a view might seem quite weighty at first sight, but those who look at the matter a little more carefully will be able to put things into perspective. It is true that Joseph, peace be upon him, was designated to give effect to the laws of God. In fact, this was at the heart of his mission as a prophet and his basic task as a ruler. All this is quite evident. It should be remembered, however, that the system operating in any country does not change overnight. Suppose a group of people who sincerely wish to establish the Islamic order of life gain total control over the affairs of a country. It would nevertheless take several years before those people succeeded in changing the social, economic, political, judicial, and legal system of that country. During the transitional period, they would be forced to retain existing laws until such time as their proposed changes make some significant headway. It should also be remembered that Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, took some 9 to 10 years after the Hijrah to bring about total change in Arabia. During the transitional period, people continued to drink wine, followed the inheritance laws of the Jahiliyyah period, and engaged in business transactions which were not at all in conformity with the principles of Islam. Likewise, Islamic civil and criminal laws did not begin to fully operate from the very first day. So, if during the first 8 or 9 years of Joseph's rule, the old laws of the Egyptian state remained in operation, it is not at all surprising. This does not in any way warrant the idea that God's messenger was designated to put into effect laws made by men rather than by God. A further question might also be raised. If it was appropriate for Egyptian royal law to be enforced in the whole country, why was it inappropriate for Joseph, peace be upon him, to follow that law in his personal life? This matter can perhaps be fully understood if we remember the method of Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. It is well known that during the first few years of Prophet Muhammad's rule, when a great many Islamic laws had not been promulgated, people drank wine, but the Prophet certainly did not indulge in it. Likewise, people carried on transactions involving interest, but the Prophet, peace be upon him, never engaged in any such transaction. Other Muslims continued to indulge in several practices relating to marriage, such as mut'ah, temporary marriage, and the combining of two sisters in wedlock, all of which were later prohibited. It is significant, however, that while others indulged in these practices, the Prophet, peace be upon him, always abstained from them. This shows that there is a difference between a prophet's gradual enforcement of Islamic law owing to compulsions of a practical nature and to following the ways of Jahiliyyah during the period of transition. Ordinary believers are condoned during the transitional phase, but it is certainly unbecoming of a messenger of God to engage in practices which he had been designated to obliterate.
قَالُوا إِنْ يَسْرِقْ فَقَدْ سَرَقَ أَخٌ لَهُ مِنْ قَبْلُ فَأَسَرَّهَا يُوسُفُ فِي نَفْسِهِ وَلَمْ يُبْدِهَا لَهُمْ قَالَ أَنْتُمْ شَرٌّ مَكَانًا وَاللَّهُ أَعْلَمُ بِمَا تَصِفُونَ
They said, No wonder that he steals for a brother of his stole before. But Joseph, peace be upon him, kept his reaction to himself without disclosing the truth to them. He merely said to himself, You are an evil lot. Allah knows well the truth of the accusation that you are making against me to my face. They said, No wonder that he steals for a brother of his stole before.
Joseph's brothers made this remark to overcome their embarrassment. They had said earlier that they were not thieves, but when they came to know that the stolen cup had been recovered from the saddlebag of their brother, Benjamin, they invented a lie and disassociated themselves from him. They even made a scandalous statement about Benjamin's brother, Joseph, peace be upon him. This only shows the kind of treatment they were capable of meting out to Benjamin had he not enjoyed Joseph's protection. This also demonstrates why both Benjamin and Joseph, peace be upon them, preferred that Benjamin not join the 10 brothers on their return journey.
قَالُوا يَا أَيُّهَا الْعَزِيزُ إِنَّ لَهُ أَبًا شَيْخًا كَبِيرًا فَخُذْ أَحَدَنَا مَكَانَهُ إِنَّا نَرَاكَ مِنَ الْمُحْسِنِينَ
They said, O powerful chief, Al-Aziz, his father is an age-stricken man, and in order that he may not suffer, seize one of us in his stead. We indeed consider you an excellent person. They said, O powerful chief, Al-Aziz,
In the above verse, the title Aziz, literally the powerful one, has been used for Joseph, peace be upon him. In view of this usage, some Quran commentators are of the opinion that Joseph, peace be upon him, was appointed to the same office that had been held earlier by Zalikha's husband. Some have even gone further towards the fantastic with the stories they have weaved. In these stories, it is claimed that since the former Aziz had died, Joseph, peace be upon him, was appointed to his office, that by dint of a miracle, Zalikha's youth was restored, and that the Egyptian king joined Joseph and Zalikha in wedlock. To crown it all, these writers even claim to know what transpired between Joseph and Zalikha on their wedding night. It is obvious such stories are nothing more than fiction. We have already noted that the word Aziz was not the specific appellation of any particular office. It was used in the sense of incumbent of power. This expression in Egypt was synonymous with the honorific words used for incumbents of power in different languages. Whatever word might have been used for incumbents of power in the Egyptian language at that time has been denoted in the Quran by the Arabic word Aziz. Now, so far as Zalikha's marriage with Joseph is concerned, the only basis for it is the biblical and Talmudic account of Joseph's story. In that account, Joseph, peace be upon him, has been mentioned as having married Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar. Now, the name of Zalikha's husband was Potiphar. Such diverse fragments of information reached Quran commentators from a variety of Israelite sources. Quite a bit of this material was derived from oral accounts. It is not surprising, therefore, that Potiphar was confused with Potiphar. Again, the word daughter changed into wife, and it was easily imagined that the wife could be none other than Zalikha. And Zalikha could have been married to Joseph, peace be upon him, only if her husband had died. Potiphar was therefore assumed to have died. Thus, the whole romantic legend of Joseph and Zalikha came into being.
قال معاذ الله أن نأخذ إلا من وجدنا متاعنا عنده إنا إذا لظالمون
Joseph, peace be upon him, said, Allah forbid that we should seize any except him with whom we found our good. Were we to do so, we would surely be one of the wrongdoers.
Allah forbid that we should seize any except him with whom we found our good.
Joseph's circumspection is noteworthy. When the cup was found in Benjamin's saddlebag, Joseph, peace be upon him, did not charge him with stealing. Joseph, peace be upon him, according to the Quran, used the expression, with whom we found our good. See verse 79. In Islamic terminology, such an expression is termed as tariya. The term denotes covering up or concealing some fact. One may resort to tariya in a situation when there remains no other alternative to save a victim from his oppressor, or to ward off a serious mischief other than resorting to a statement or device which conceals the true facts. Faced with a difficult situation such as the one mentioned above, a pious person would refrain from lying, but he might well resort to an ambiguous statement or to a device aimed at concealing facts so as to ward off wrongs. Such an action is quite permissible from both the religious and moral viewpoints, provided the motive for the action is to ward off some serious evil rather than to reap some benefit. Now, let us consider how, in this particular instance, Joseph fulfilled all the conditions of a permissible tariya. First, he put the drinking cup in Benjamin's saddlebag with the latter's full consent. He did not, however, direct the servants to charge Benjamin with stealing. When the servants charged the brothers with theft, Joseph, peace be upon him, simply stood up and, without uttering a word, searched their belongings. Subsequently, when Joseph's brothers requested him to detain any of them in place of Benjamin, he simply responded by saying that they themselves had suggested that only the person with whom the stolen good was found should be detained. Now, since the cup was found in Benjamin's saddlebag, he could be detained, for how could anyone else be detained? Instances of such tariya are also found in the military campaigns of the Prophet, peace be upon him. There is no valid reason, therefore, to find fault with the practice of tariya in the manner described above.